The date is May 11th, 2001, and we're watching A Knight's Tale. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Sir Ulrich von Lichtenstein to my Geoffrey Chaucer.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So, this week, we are looking back at May 2001 when the movies and theaters were The Mummy Returns, Driven, Bridget Jones's Diary, Freddy Got Fingered, and of course our movie for today, A Knight's Tale, which earned $117.5 million on a $65 million budget.
I feel like we need to go back, and if you're going to be Chaucer, you need to give me a better introduction and call me like the safeguarder of all women's virginity and protector of manhood. And
yes, or one of my favorite ones is when it's where he spent a year in Tibet trying to further understand the sound of a whisper.
Yes, that was good. Very good. Yeah. But if you have no clue what we're talking about, we will, of course, be spoiling it for you later, if not already. So if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you any further, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Now, do you think it's safe to say that at $117.5 million, this is the highest grossing movie about jousting that there is out there?
I would have to think so. Another movie specifically about jousting doesn't come to mind. Although I think there's that new movie with Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, and Adam Driver that I think jousting plays a part in that. So I don't know. I guess the champion will have to defend its throne coming up in 2022.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I've found three. First is, he will rock you.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, it's a little on the nose.
Yeah. Second up, we have From Peasant to Knight, One Man Can Change His Stars.
I like that one.
Yeah. And finally, he didn't make the rules. He was born to break them.
I don't know. That one, I feel like they're going for something, but I don't really feel like it captures the essence of the movie.
No. I mean, I think probably the second one is my favorite, the One Man Can Change His Stars. I mean, it mentions a knight in there, so you kind of know what you're getting into, sort of, with this movie. But those may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
I wrote this a week ago and I completely forgot what I wrote, so I'm just going to give it a quick once over here. Here we go. When Sir Ector dies before his match in the finals of a local jousting tournament, his young squire William Thatcher decides to don his armor and compete in his stead. After winning the tournament, Will decides he wants to continue the grift and convinces his pals Watt and Roland to help him train. With the help of a famed poet, Geoffrey Chaucer, to write up a fake patent of nobility, Will becomes Sir Ulrich, I can't roll my R's, von Lichtenstein, and begins to compete in the European Jousting League, the EJL, if you will. As he begins to improve, he draws the eye of a lovely noble woman named Jocelyn and the ire of Count Adhemar, his rival on the jousting field and for Jocelyn's heart. Will our young squire be able to change his stars and truly become a knight capable of defeating Adhemar when it counts, becoming the jousting champion of the world, and winning the heart of his foxy lady? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice. Adhemar when it counts. Tell me you threw that pun in on purpose.
You betcha. You betcha.
Yeah, this is one of those movies. I love this movie. I've always just, it's just a fun, good time. And I'm not a huge fan of medieval movies for the most part. I mean, I liked some of them, but it's not a huge genre for me. I'm not a Game of Thrones person. I know that might get a bunch of people hating me, but I've only ever seen like 4 episodes of Game of Thrones and I just couldn't do it. But I like this realistic look, but with the modern spin. And so it's just one of these movies that I've always found fun. It's action-packed. It's funny. But it gives you a sense that you are watching an old-time movie without, or like a medieval times movie, without really worrying about just being lost in everything. Like, you know, they make it accessible for a modern audience. And I think it was a really smart blend that they do. So I've loved this movie since it came out. I saw this one in theaters. I remember that. But What about you, Colin? What kind of experience do you have with A Knight's Tale? Because this is one that I remember we've brought up.
Yeah.
We brought it up in our Blazing Saddles episode because of the bonus scene that I was talking about with this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I also watched, I remember watching this movie in theaters, me and some buddies. It must have been early on when one of my friends had it finally got their driver's license and had a car, and we drove to Peace River and watched this movie in the theater. And it was also one of the first DVDs I ever remember owning, along with Fast and the Furious. So I watched it a lot when I was a teenager. And then for some reason, I hadn't watched it probably since I graduated high school until now. And watching it This go around, I realized what a travesty that was, because this is one of my favorite movies, I think, that I've
that we've covered.
It's a movie that I liked a lot and then forgot about it and watched it again and was completely enamored with.
Yeah, it's a great movie and it still holds up, and I love seeing like young Paul Bettany.
Mm-hmm.
And young Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
You know, he's so skinny in this compared to some of the things he's in these days. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny.
Yeah.
And like Paul Bettany, like he knocks it out of the park as far as I'm concerned, more than anyone else. But like the supporting cast is amazing in this. But Paul Bettany, I mean, it's like he's the man in this movie.
It's hilarious that you say that, because I was watching a YouTube video of Paul Bettany, and it was kind of, I think it was Variety or Entertainment Tonight or somebody was interviewing him about like the various roles throughout his career. And obviously I think it was in advance of like WandaVision coming out and that sort of thing. And
okay,
the very first one that they talk about is A Knight's Tale. And he tells a story about how him and the writer were really good friends, and the writer / director really wanted him in the movie, but the studio did not want him at all because he was unknown at the time, and they didn't want him at the movie at all. They didn't have plans for like Geoffrey Chaucer to be like a role in the movie.
Yeah.
But then basically they just tested him for a bunch of things, and they came up with this idea of having Chaucer, because A Knight's Tale is based on the Canterbury Tales part of it.
And it's one of the stories in the Canterbury Tales. It's the first story of the Canterbury Tales. Yeah.
But basically it ended up just being that, you know, the role was kind of written for him, and it was a tough sell for the studio to actually get him to be in the movie.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, he makes the movie. Like, I would say when I finished watching it, I felt like this is one of the best casts I've ever, like, I think it's a highly underrated movie, but even a more highly underrated cast.
Yeah.
I think almost every performance of every character is amazing.
Yeah.
In this movie, but Paul Bettany definitely takes the cake.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, well, I mean, you touched on the writer and director, so let's jump into A Knight's Tale. Yeah, directed, produced, and written by Brian Helgeland, and also producing credits go to Tim Van Relum and Todd Black. We open this movie on words on this screen proclaiming, "In medieval times, a sport arose, embraced by noble and peasant fans alike, although only noble knights could compete. The sport was jousting." And we're into it. This quick scene at the beginning, like, they show the words and then they show, like, a joust in progress. This is actually an outtake, is what this is.
Oh, really?
Is, yeah, that is Heath Ledger's stuntman. That's why he's in the Heath Ledger armor at the beginning there, and they're like, well, he accidentally fell off his horse and he wasn't supposed to fall off his horse, so they put it into the movie in this scene in the opening. And I'm like, well, okay, right on, that's awesome.
Nice. One thing I had forgotten about this movie, like, I kind of remembered the story, and I remember, like, the whole movie can be summed up as, like, with the whole, you know, a man can change his stars, like, it's that, that's like the moral of the story, or
yeah,
whatever,
pretty much.
But I completely forgot that, or never even realized, I think, when I watched it back in the day, that this really is a sports movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it follows the sports movie, like, archetype. It's not, it is a medieval, it's set in medieval times, obviously, but I think, to your point about not liking medieval movies that much, I think the bringing in that sports aspect of it, mm-hmm. it being, like, it's very reminiscent almost even of, like, the first Mighty Ducks, or, like, Rocky even to some extent, yeah. like, where it's really about the sport that drives the character and makes that, it's the underdog story,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, and like something like Rocky, I mean, they stick that love story through it as well to make mm-hmm. the sport even more impactful. I mean, you know, it is fun seeing them as sports fans, where it's like, you know, everyone's like, oh, I'm going to win this for you. And then, yeah. and then, you know, you have the moment where it's like, well, okay, no, if you really love me, you will lose. And he just stands there and takes it. I mean, you know, yeah, it's, there's a fun love story in there, but at its core, yeah, it's a great sports movie, and you wouldn't think of it as a sports movie.
Yeah.
With Sir Ector dying in the beginning, did you recognize the guy that plays Sir Ector? He was Little John in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh, I didn't I remember looking at him and thinking that he looked very familiar, but I couldn't place the face.
Yeah. He likes medieval movies, I guess.
Yeah. I was going to ask you the same thing about the priest later on when, you know, when he... we'll get to it later, but when he rides the horse into the church.
Oh.
For whatever reason, I feel like I've seen that priest before in some other movie.
I didn't make a connection with him, no. But
okay.
But oh, so with Sir Ector dying in the beginning, though, my favorite part is where they switch the nose plugs. And when he hands him the nose plugs, he indicates which nostril it's for. This is the right, this is the left. And it's like, really? Like, first of all, like, the fact that you guys are switching these little bits of fabric back and forth, but, like, why does it matter if it's the right or left? It's just one of those little details yeah. that it's so random and so nonsensical, but, man, like, I just, it thrown away line that I found hilarious.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of those little types of things that in this movie, these like weird, and I think it's because you have guys like Alan Tudyk who are good at that style, that like subtle, and even the guy who plays Roland, I can't remember what his name
Mark
is.
Mark Addy.
Yeah, but they're both good at that. Yeah, yeah. They're both good at that subtle comedy, that really understated comedy that if you don't see it right away, you'll probably just miss it, but it's so funny.
Yeah, but with Watt, though, I mean, like, he's just so over the top with like wanting to fight anyone. Like, he keeps saying Fong. Like, what is
Fong?
Fong you. Yeah.
I looked it up. I found a couple of things. There's some suggestion that it's from like an old English word, which just means to like what you would think, like to beat somebody,
to throttle.
But yeah. But my favorite was the Urban Dictionary one. It's like it basically just references A Knight's Tale. It says to strike, or more specifically, kick. And then it says, taken from the film A Knight's Tale, where it is used by the character Watt, played by Alan Tudyk.
Well, okay then.
A font. Some other people also define it as someone who is always there for you whenever you need them. And then it's like, without a Fongi Wongi, life couldn't be any crazier. So I don't think that was the reference that
probably not
Watt
no.
is referring to.
Yeah. Well, I always thought it was like flog. I'll flog you.
Yeah.
And this time I had subtitles on because I'm getting older and my hearing's going. And yeah, it was like Fong, F-O-N-G. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's not flog. Flog would have made sense to me. And then now it's like, I'm all confused. What's a Fong?
I mean, if I just had to define it based on context, to me, fonging sounds like, it sounds more visceral than just striking somebody. Like, it sounds almost like mutilating someone, because he just says random words. He, like, says, I will fong you, and then he just starts, like, saying, like, pain, lots of pain, I will strike
your
you.
Your entrails like, will become your extrails.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a medieval way of saying, I will fuck you up, bruh.
Yeah, basically. I think that's what it amounts to.
Yeah. So I do love that this movie takes basically like no time to get into.
Yeah.
It's like we're introduced in the beginning, you know, oh, he's dead. Well, we need to eat tonight. Boom. Story has started. I'm going to pretend. And, you know, and we get the conveniently caved in mask so that he can't take off his helmet.
Yeah.
So that they don't get caught in the beginning.
That was surprising to me because I could have sworn, like, every time, the two times I watched this movie, actually three times because I did watch it. I had forgot we were doing it, and I had watched this movie about a month back.
Yeah.
Anyways, when I saw it was on Netflix. But I thought there was more lead up to the movie. Like, I thought we got to see Sir Ector joust and then get hurt and then die. I thought there was way more to that. I didn't think it just started. Kind of like you said.
Yeah, starts right over the dead body. And I love how good they are with the exposition dumps in this movie.
Yeah. Cuz
they teach you a lot really fast, but like it's one of those explain it like I'm 10 situations because they do really good at that, you know, where it's the he has to unhorse you to win. You're 2 points ahead, right? And he's like, "I know how to score." You know, so it's nice that it doesn't feel like exposition, but they're totally teaching it. And later on when Count Adhemar does the same with Jocelyn, when he explains the rules of it.
Yeah, like learning. Yeah, you learn like if you unseat him. The only thing, because it was like if you hit them between the neck and the waist, it's 1 point. If you hit them in the helmet, it's 2 points. If you knock them off their horse, you win.
Yeah.
And you all, but the thing that never really comes into play is if you knock someone off their horse, they say you get to keep their horse. But Will at one point is winning quite a bit, but I never see him with more horses.
Yeah.
Even though I've seen him knock multiple people off.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean they're even fighting over who gets to ride the horse at points, and it's like, well, okay, yeah, they should have multiple horses unless they're just selling the horses as they go along, you know.
Yeah,
it could be that too, but you'd think everyone should have a horse.
He's also merciful, so he might just be letting them keep their horse just because.
Yeah,
but even with the exposition, I also like how they explain the whole thing about like how only nobles can compete in jousts, and they teach you what a patent of nobility is and all that, and how that works. And even the fact, I never really understood how it is you can enter multiple events, but only the winner of the joust can be deemed the tournament champion.
Yeah.
So like you could win the swords.
You could win every other one.
You could win every other thing, but not be tournament champion because you didn't compete in the joust.
Yeah.
Seems odd.
Well, and I was looking at the other pictures because, you know, he bangs the shields to show which events he's competing in. And there's one where it's like a bow and arrow. And it's like, okay, well, that one is obviously like archery target. But then there's one where it's like two bow and arrows crossing. And then there was also spears. And then there were also like maces. Like, it's just like, oh my God, like, are they out there like clubbing each other with maces? Or like, what's the two bow and arrow ones? Like, are they shooting at each other? Yeah.
The two bow and arrows, like medieval paintball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They don't have tips on them, so they'll bounce off.
Yeah.
I read a bunch about the fact that, like, the actual, like, jousts, is that, no, the javelins, I guess they would be? Are they, what were they? They
like the spears?
Yeah, the things that they use. I read that they were, like, made out of, like, hollowed out, like, balsa wood type things, and inside they just filled it with, like, uncooked pasta and other wood chunks, and that's what gives you the splintering effect when they blow up like that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder what that, like, it being a stuntman on that movie must have been like.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it must have been kind of scary, because it's like, they seem, I was wondering if maybe it was like one of the scenario where they kind of went slow and then sped it up.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really seem like that. It seems like it was at pace, but.
Well, yeah, because it would be hard to.
I still feel like it would be scary.
Yeah, it would be hard to imitate a horse in full gallop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it would be hard for a horse to imitate speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they'd have to be going full speed at each other. Like, I guess the only safe part is the fact that all these lances. Lance, that's
lances,
the word I was looking
go.
For.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the lances are breakaway lances, so.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they've got, like, safety goggles on underneath so that they don't get splinters in their eyes. I mean, because there is the one part where Count Adhemar is saying how brave Sir Ulrich is.
Yeah.
Because he never looks up at the last minute.
Yeah.
You know, or looks down or whatever it is, right? He says they most knights will block their eyes, but he doesn't. He's fearless. And so it's like, well, okay, that means that his stunt guy had to ride without looking down at the last minute, so he wasn't protecting his eyes. I hope they had goggles on underneath.
Yeah.
So, Paul Bettany, he's got the best introduction to a movie ever. He's got his whole trudging speech.
Yeah.
You know, I trudge. How would you feel? I mean, for the fact that you mentioned that, like, they kind of wrote this part for him to get him into the movie. How would you feel when you look at the script and go, well, okay, I'm naked for like the first 20 minutes of the movie that I'm in it.
I mean, if I'm me, I'm probably not enthused, but Paul Bettany seems like he's probably okay.
Yeah. I mean, you just like, you see him sit down on the side of the road and it's just like, you know, it's just like, oh, that would itch.
Yeah, that couldn't be comfortable. There's sand in all the places you don't want it to be, and dirt and grass and who knows what.
And it's just the kind of things that he does physically as an actor in this moment. Like when he lifts up his foot to try to like pull a splinter out with his teeth, right? You know, they film him so that you don't see anything, but your mind absolutely goes to what the actors on set must have been looking at when he's bouncing around. It's like, that's not a pretty sight.
I'm binge watching Seinfeld right now, and it reminds me of that episode where Jerry's dating the girl who like doesn't wear clothes.
Oh yeah.
And then
he
like he has to stop dating her because he sees her sneeze while she's naked, and then he sees her trying to open a jar of pickles, and he's just like, there's so many like small muscles in the human body that activate when you do these movements that you never realize.
Yeah, yeah. There's things bouncing in this. Oh boy. You had mentioned earlier about the fact that Geoffrey Chaucer, I mean, he's got Canterbury Tales, and A Knight's Tale is one of those. I read that they also, with Geoffrey Chaucer, there's a period of his history, like a year and a half of his life, that historians have no record of what actually happened to him. So this is a fictional account of what might have happened during that time.
Okay.
So yeah, historically, there is also, you know, like, potential that this could be real in a way. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't know that this movie had any relation to like a book or anything like that until I was compiling reviews, and so many people were mentioning like just historical things that were in the movie, but I was like, I have no idea. Apparently there's like a lot of references to Chaucer's like other works and other stories and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
like, I think,
the two guys that are trying to collect their gambling debt are characters that are featured. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and he even, you know, he even says to them, "I will immortalize you in history, you know, that's how I will get my revenge. That's a cheeky little, yeah, wink and a nod to the camera or to the fans of Chaucer at home that are all like, oh, look, he said it. He said it. There's that thing he said. Yeah.
The Chaucer faithful.
Yeah.
I forgot to look up to see if Gelderland was a real place.
Oh, yeah, I don't know about that. I know that they filmed this, like, somewhere in Eastern Europe. I think almost like Romania or, you know, the Czech Republic or something. And so a lot of the actors don't actually speak English, like a lot of the background performers. And so there's the scene where he goes to sword fight for the first time and Chaucer does his whole speech and then finishes his speech. And Mark Addy goes, yeah, like out of the corner of his mouth. And then everyone cheers. That was actually an ad lib from Mark Addy because none of the people there spoke English, so they didn't realize that he was done. And so he was prompting the background performers to cheer. But yeah, really? They left it in because it's such a funny moment. Like, it's hilarious.
It's so funny, and it works so well
for that
scene. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. Gelderland is a real place. It's a province in it's a province of the Netherlands.
Okay. Huh. And so they don't wonder why he speaks like a Brit then, huh?
Yeah, I guess not.
Or is he speaking in his real accent? Like, is he just speaking Australian right now? Like,
no,
I can't even tell.
He's speaking some weird English-Australian amalgam, but it's more English.
Yeah.
Because I watched an interview with Heath Ledger after, and like his actual Australian accent was more like distinguished Australian.
Oh, okay. Yeah, with Heath Ledger, I mean, God, like at this point it was like 10 Things I Hate About You and A Knight's Tale and Brokeback Mountain. It's like those were kind of the things that Heath Ledger was known for at this point. And I know that, like, the Joker, I can never see Heath Ledger in that performance.
Yeah, in the same way.
I mean, like, yeah, like, you look at something like this, and it's just like, okay, he's charming, he's handsome, you know, and, like, he's... he's Chris. He could be a Hemsworth.
Yeah,
you know, like that's the kind of charm that this guy has. But with the Joker, it's like I can never see him in that movie. Even though there's the one scene where you see him without makeup, like just for a second, I've paused on that before, and it's still like, no, he's the Joker in that movie. Like,
yeah, that's it. I was thinking about that too. How interesting that performance is because. Like, I mean, it's so funny. I remember when Heath Ledger was announced as the Joker.
Yeah.
And people were not happy.
No.
People were very, very upset. And because, like you said, it's like he's the A Knight's Tale guy and he's the Brokeback Mountain guy and the 10 Things I Hate About You guy. And it's just, and I mean, you just look at him and he looks like a pretty boy. Like,
yeah.
And then that performance comes along and is obviously one of, like, the greatest performances in cinema, in my opinion. But, yeah, I never, like, they might as well have just put the Joker, like, played by himself. Like,
yeah,
I can't look at a picture of the Joker and then look at a picture of Heath Ledger and be like, oh, yeah, that's the same guy. Like, it's,
yeah.
They look nothing alike. Like, I can't see any of Heath Ledger.
Yep.
In the Joker, like, that's how immersed it is. It's so strange.
Yeah, it's very impressive. But, I mean, he is charming as shit in this movie, though, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you know. I feel like, like you said, he's the fourth Hemsworth.
Yeah.
In this movie. Like, he reminds me so much of Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
Yeah.
That I was like, I wonder if Heath Ledger, if the Marvel Cinematic Universe had begun circa 2000, I bet you Heath Ledger would have been Thor.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, with his charm, I mean, he's got his meet cute on the horse and with the church, and I mean, he's got his little moment with that little girl where he's confessing that he grew up in that same neighborhood, and I mean, just, yeah, charm left and right, and then he's got that manipulative charm that he uses on the blacksmith Kate. You know, it's
yeah that scene where he walks the horse in the church
is one of my
favorite scenes in the entire movie. But like, not that part of it, the part after he leaves when the priest is talking to Jocelyn. Just that I find it so funny when he's like talking about how she's cursed with beauty, and she's like, "Oh, I pray every day that he'll take it from me," and all this. The priest's performance in that scene is just so funny, like, so good.
Yeah, and just like not picking up at all on her sarcasm, like just,
yeah.
Oh God, why have you cursed me with such beauty? Yeah.
I thought it was weird that William, he really doesn't pay. He kind of like, I mean, technically he does do a bad thing about lying about who he is.
Yeah.
And he never really has to pay for it. Even with Jocelyn, like Jocelyn never gets angry. Like she never gets angry over the fact that he deceived her about any of it.
Yeah, no, she goes and fetches his father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's just like, my love for you is so vast that it doesn't matter if you lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he gets put in the stocks for a little while, and then that's it. The worst is that he's getting vegetables thrown at him.
Yeah.
And a little kid slapping him in the head. But yeah, I think when they do meet Kate to getting his armor fixed, I mean, I think that brings a nice dynamic to this little group as well.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, they all bring their own things.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, yeah, Mark Addy is like the voice of reason, and Alan Tudyk is the loose cannon, and she's the motherly one or whatever, right? And Paul Bettany's the dreamer.
Yeah. You see it perfectly when they're all combining to write that love letter to Jocelyn for Will, and just to each of them adds their own little thing.
Yeah.
But it is, I do like that too. That's like the forming of the team, you know, in the might use the Mighty Ducks or whatever. That would be the point where like Banks joins the team, and they become an actual team, and he gets his new armor with the Nike swoosh.
Which is exactly what I was hoping would come up, because that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
I knew that's where you're trying to get to.
So always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week A Knight's Tale is brought to you by Nike. Now, honestly, I don't know if it's actually sponsored by Nike. They had to get permission.
I read that it was.
Well, maybe it was. Okay, I know they had to get permission. That's what I saw as words for it. But yeah, I mean, there's no way you can look at that and not think Nike anyway. But fun fact, the founder of Nike is named Phil Knight.
Yeah, Phil Shoe Dog Knight.
So, you know, it's a fun little wink and a nod, I think, maybe.
Maybe it, maybe they'll make another A Knight's Tale, and people will think it's this movie, but it'll actually be about Phil Knight and the story of Nike. A Knight's Tale Part 2. Completely unrelated.
And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, I like the armor. Like I like the fact that the legs are up on the horse, like just like built into the saddle, and everyone's laughing at him when he comes strutting out.
The one thing I kind of didn't understand about the whole jousting tournament thing is, like, are there knights who just compete in joust? Like, I always thought that most of them were more like Adhemar, whereas, like, they were generals and, like, legitimate, like, warriors, and this was kind of, and then it was kind of, like, at the county fair or whatever, they all just got together and had a fun competition. But like, I thought that's what a knight was, but it seems like in this it's like a knight might just be a person who competes in these medieval events.
Yeah, someone with nobility, and that's the only requirement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did find it interesting that when they show Adhemar off at war, because he gets called back out to the front lines, that he's still like keeping an eye on the jousting competitions back at the standings.
The scrolls.
Like, someone had to risk their life by coming out to an active battlefield on horseback to bring him these scrolls of the standings of the joust.
Yeah. It's not like in modern times where it'd be just as easy as like, oh, just fetch me and the newspaper, or I'm gonna go to the sports page and see what happened in the NHL last night. It's like, no, I have one person whose job it is to go around to these tournaments and collect me the scrolls of the tournament winners and then bring them back to me at my outpost.
Yeah. It was mind-boggling. But I'm wondering, though, does he, at the end, does he... Like, okay, Prince Edward says that he has been removed from the front lines. You know, like, the army has to withdraw, and that's why he's able to compete in the last tournament. But he said that it was because he started, like, pillaging nearby villages. Like, he and his men started pillaging. And it's like... Did he do that on purpose so that he could compete in this final tournament?
He could come back. Yeah, I don't know.
Was he just like, okay, boys, go into town and have your way with everyone. I gots to compete. I gots to go to London.
I mean, that would lend credence to the idea of Adhemar actually being a bad guy.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, for the most part, like, I don't know, Adhemar, like, I found him to kind of be like an arrogant prick.
Yeah, for the most part he's just a douche,
but I didn't find him to be a bad guy. And like, to be honest, he's up until like about the halfway point of the movie, like where he beats Will in that their first meeting.
Yeah,
I'm kind of like, I mean, he has a point. Like, I'm kind of on his side a little bit, because I would be like, this guy just shows up and thinks he's, like, hot shit, and now I put him in his place, and, like, he's telling me, like, the next time he meets me, he's gonna beat me. Okay. Like,
yeah.
So yeah. I'm kind of with him. Like, he just, you know, this guy just kind of, like, shows up out of nowhere and is, you know, trying to take his joust and his girl and all this stuff, and then...
Yeah.
But then, I mean, yeah, by the end, when he's like, you know, he schemes to get Will captured and then goes into the stocks and roughs him up. And then you're kind of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and his breakaway not, lance.
Yeah, like, that too. Or even when he's talking about Jocelyn, what does he say? He says something about, like, trophies, horses, and women.
Yeah.
And he's,
in that order.
In that order.
Yeah. Well, yes, and I mean... entered into negotiations with her father for marriage, and he's this underlying current of evil. Like, he just, his presence is felt throughout the movie, but he's really doesn't seem like that formidable of a threat for the most part.
I think honestly a lot of his bad guy-ness is just made by the fact that they have Rufus Sewell, is that his name?
Yeah.
That they cast him, like, that guy just looks like, he just looks like an evil, like, medieval evil man. He could be typecast as that.
Did you ever see the TV series The Following?
No. Is that the Kevin Bacon?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard of it. I haven't watched it, though.
Yeah, so James Purefoy, who plays, like, Prince Edward, he's, like, the creepy cult leader, and it's just, like, I can never look at him as Prince Edward the same.
Oh, okay.
Because as Prince Edward, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
Right? But the other thing I don't understand is they find out at one tournament that, oh, like, it's royalty. And then when he shows up later on and, like, everyone throws in the towel, no, we're throwing it in. We're not going to compete against him because that's Prince Edward. Like... he didn't change his armor, like, from the time that he, like, you know, they did their draw.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he didn't change his armor the next time he competed. So yeah, it's like, how did they not all still know that it was, like, some sort of royalty?
Yeah, because I think he's going under the name of, like, Thomas Colville.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's like, yeah, in the first tournament, they haven't found it out yet. But then in the second one, it's like, somehow somebody recognizes him, I guess, And then that's when they realize, oh, like, so, but that's, like, the weird thing about it is, like, then Will, like, kind of could have got in trouble because, like, the first time he jousted him and there was no issues.
Yeah.
They didn't know he was royalty, so he didn't technically know he was endangering a member of the royal family, so there's no punishment.
Yeah.
But I mean, what if in that instance he had killed him?
True.
Like, what if what would have happened in the free? He would have just been like, well, I didn't know. Like, and then is that a worthy
Yeah.
excuse, or would they be like, you should have known?
Yeah, well, because later on when Chaucer is like, you know, you knowingly endangered a member of the royal family, he knowingly endangers himself is his comeback. Like, would that stand up in a court of law? I don't think so. I think your patent of nobility might be looked into a little bit closer at that point.
Yeah. I did like Prince Edward, though. I don't know what it was. But like when he shows up, even though I like the movie, for as good as it is, it's not like it's the most unpredictable movie in the world.
Oh,
but
no, absolutely not.
When he shows up at the stocks and gives his little speech, and I love how he's like, this is my word, and thus is beyond contestation.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I was like, what power?
Yeah, my historians have found that he comes from the most ancient of bloodlines.
Yeah.
And it's, okay, sure.
Yeah, there's no internet to fact check.
Yeah.
But it was good. I found that moment very touching. I loved it.
Yeah. Well, there are several moments of feels in this movie. I mean, the communal love letter, you already brought that one up. That's mm-hmm. one of them. There is the part where he goes to see his dad.
Yeah, that one is, that's really,
you know,
it was
that,
really
that's
nice.
Another one. And like, even like, and also the flashback of his dad giving him away. I mean, that was another one. But yeah, when he goes to see his dad and his dad just has to say, you know, like, and has he found his way home at last?
Oh yeah. Has he followed his feet?
Yeah, has he followed his feet? And it's like, okay, we know what he's saying, but I mean, it's just like, it was such a sweet moment. Yeah. And it's just like, oh my God, there's a lot going on here. Like, I don't necessarily like the love story as much. Like, there's some parts of it that are just like a little silly for me. But like, yeah, the father-son relationship and, you know, things like that. And the group. Like the five of these people that find each other, the family that they've made.
Yeah.
Is a fun little group.
Yeah, I think the group family dynamic and them coming together is really strong. The father stuff and just how they interweave that at the right moments.
Yeah.
Like even the fact that you first get the glimpse after he gets knocked in the head by Adhemar and their first one there. And
yeah.
It's like they just, this movie to me is like, it has very good pacing. Like everything is, like how you said, mm-hmm. like they put all the exposition in exactly the right places so that it doesn't come off, you know they're doing it, but it doesn't come off as like spoon feeding or really overbearing. It's entertaining.
Because the action is still happening while the exposition is going on.
Yeah.
That's part of what makes it, yeah.
And
it's not like in Big Trouble in Little China where they just stop dead and start rattling off
exactly.
exposition. Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah, and then they throw in like the past and they kind of build the understory or the backstory as you go in like little bits so that you figure
yeah.
it out. And again, but again, it never takes like a big diversion from the linear story that's being told, and then the performance and I think the comedy and everything make it so entertaining that I just found like the movie, it's actually way longer than I thought it was. It's like
yeah.
2 hours and 20 minutes or something like that, but it goes by pretty fast.
Well, because they had to fit in a few different sports montages in this movie. I mean,
yeah.
there's the training montage
the
with
training
Low
montage.
Rider.
There's the winning streak montage.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's the Ulrich gets his ass kicked for love montage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And all scored with like these, you know, 70s hits.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Guardians of the Galaxy all of a sudden, but I love it. I mean, yeah. Yeah, Low Rider. I really enjoy the dance part,
yeah.
which, I mean, again, it's kind of a goofy, surreal kind of moment, but I love how it goes from like an old fashioned, like a medieval court music, and it morphs into David Bowie. I mean, I just, I love that moment. It's, and it's fun, and you feel like getting up and dancing yourself, even though it's like, it's so, I don't know, it's, it, it is a bit bonkers.
I mean, yeah, I think, again, to, and the other thing that adds to the movie is that soundtrack, like,
yeah,
you have the We Will Rock You, the Lowrider, that Golden Years song.
Boys Are Back in Town.
Boys Are Back in Town. Like, there's some, there's something to adding that modern music over the medieval. Well, just like, this movie taught me a term that I'd never heard before. It's like anachronistic, which means like when you take something that's old time and you add modern influence to it. And so that's what this movie's doing it. And it really works for this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's probably movies where it doesn't work so well. But in this movie in particular, I think it all, like, coalesces to make something amazing.
Yeah, no, it's a good blend, that's for sure.
Yeah. To go back to the love story, I didn't mind Jocelyn. I kind of felt for her little handmaid, who just always has to go back and forth to from her to the other people and deliver her message. But
messages and tokens.
Yeah, it was good. I thought she was fine, but it was like, I didn't feel like the relationship had that much depth. It's more, it came off more as like a teenage romance, which maybe it is meant to be. He seems pretty young, but.
Yeah, it didn't have a lot of depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the scene, though, where they do send the handmaiden over to find out what he's going to be wearing to the dance that night, what the color of his tunic.
Yeah,
his tunic. And Mark Addy starts staring at their tent. Green with brown toggles and, or wooden toggles. Yeah.
Yeah, I like the one too. After they send Watt to deliver the letter that they've all written, and then he comes back and he's like, "Did she give you anything? Any letters or tokens?" And he's like, "Has to give William the kiss." And that's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I love. I mean, you know, like, okay, we've got our 2001 gay panic reaction from you know, he has to spit immediately, but I like how William is just, you know, she kissed me.
As if it was her.
As if it was her, yeah.
I was like, well, Watt, on the one hand, yeah, you had to kiss Will, but I mean, the trade-off is like, you got to kiss Jocelyn, so.
Yeah, and isn't there like a moment there, though? Like, that's what it looks like where his mind is going, right? It looks like his first thought is, wait a minute, that means that she kissed you, but then he just doesn't care. Like, it's like, she kissed me, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot being played right there. I like Adhemar's squire as well, I have to say. Yeah. Where he starts trying to be part of, you know, what Chaucer is able to do. And he has the one line where he says, "The defender of his enormous manhood..." is one of his lines. I had to write that one down. But yeah, he was kind of a fun little side character. I mean, that didn't get very much screen time, but
yeah, he seemed like kind of, he was like the nice, like, you almost felt for him like he was too nice to be Adhemar's spokesperson or whatever.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he just no one though has the showmanship of Geoffrey Chaucer. I mean, I still, for some reason, get chills with his one where he comes running out of the crowd at the end with the, "I missed my introduction," right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he finally gets to introduce William as William. But I do also love the, you know, lords, ladies, and everyone here not sitting on a cushion. And
yeah.
Like, apparently he got laryngitis from the amount of screaming that he had to do in this movie. Like, I read that bit where it's like everyone here not sitting on a cushion is actually a reference to a Beatles performance that happened in 1963. It's their Royal Command performance, and John Lennon dedicated the last song for the people in the cheaper seats just clap your hands and the rest of you just rattle your jewelry. So it was kind of like a play on what John Lennon did here, where it's, yeah, the recognizing everyone else, you know. We are all equals, but he's able to put a spin on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I mean, I feel like that aspect of it, again, like, really emboldens the sports nature of this movie, is his thing, his speeches, but also that aspect of really playing, it's a noble, that thing about, like, all these people, like, they could never, they'll never have the chance to be down there.
Yeah.
But it's like he still plays to them and, like, really makes it their show, like, emboldens the common man, I guess, or whatever, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I really like that showmanship nature of it.
He's definitely putting on, like, a real pro wrestling experience.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because pro wrestling, you either need the great character that's up on the ropes, like, popping open his beer like Stone Cold Steve Austin or something like that, or you need the really crazy, outlandish manager. You know, you got to have one of the two, you know? So I guess he's the outlandish manager. He's Mr. Fuji out there.
The Paul Bearer.
Paul Bearer, yeah.
Nice. I love the commitment of Roland. Every time there's a joust, and I swear they have the same scene. Well, it's not the same scene, but Mark Addy does almost the exact same thing every time when they, like, chase the horse. They chase the horse out as he goes to joust.
Slap it on the haunches.
Yeah, they slap it and just... It's like having a... They're like the pit crew, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they are. And, I mean, thanks to Kate's magnificent armor, they're not out there trying to hoist him up onto the horse, too. There is that moment I love. And that is the moment where he first reveals his new armor. But yeah, he's coming strolling across the field, and meanwhile in the background you see like three of these squires trying to put their knight up onto the horse and struggling, and it's just like, oh, I love it, you know? Like, yeah, they are the pit crew, but thanks to Kate, they've got a high performance vehicle that they don't have to worry too much about.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to talk about, like, I think we've covered almost everything. Do you want to talk about the final joust?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, so we get back to London towards the end.
Yeah, the World Championship.
The boys are back in town. The World Championship. The boys are back in town playing. I have to say that when he goes to, like, visit his dad in London, I'm embarrassed to say it wasn't until this viewing that I thought Thatcher was just his last name, not his occupation.
I didn't know what Thatcher was.
Yeah. It's like, wait, the Thatcher... Oh, you're fixing the roof. You're a roofer. That's what a Thatcher is. Yeah. I mean, I guess this is back in the day when, like, the baker would have last name Baker. But, I had no idea.
Smith.
Yeah. I had no idea what the origin of Thatcher was until this viewing.
Well, I think because they kind of use it in both ways. Like, there's times where they call him, like, William Thatcher. Yeah. But I think it's Adhemar who first said... It's almost like in the world of the movie, it's like that is just known. Like, if your last name is Thatcher, then, you know, they would just know that that's what you're a descendant of or whatever. And so then, you know, Adhemar sometimes makes reference to him as not Thatcher, but a Thatcher and that kind of thing. And that was similar to, I didn't pick up on it until probably the second time I watched it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so... You know, we have all the bits that we already talked about. He gets figured out that he's not actually nobility, and he gets put in the stocks. But then he gets knighted by Prince Edward, and we've got our final showdown between William and Count Adhemar. How do you feel about this closing scene with the fact that, you know, like, okay, the breakaway lance stabs him, and so now... He needs him to latch it to me arm, Watt. Latch it to me arm. I don't know. Like, I feel like that is the most reckless thing you could possibly do is to joust without any armor on.
I mean, the thing is, it's like you either, and I mean, I think they say something to this effect, but it's like you're either going to get absolutely obliterated or you're going to win. But I mean, the one thing I thought about it is, so he gets basically staked through the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me like the lance has pierced the armor to the point that it's also like at least partially penetrated his arm. Because if he can't lift his shoulder, that seems to be the case.
Well, he's got a bloodstain, right?
Yeah, he's got a bloodstain, but I mean, I think they could have done a little bit more with the budget to maybe get like a little blood leaking out of the wound or something.
Yeah, something. It could have spread a little bit, yeah.
Something to that effect. But it's just, also, when he makes that final ride, like, you can see he's fully lifting up, and maybe it's just the adrenaline, but it's like, if you got stabbed, like, pierced that shoulder muscle, I don't think any amount of strength in the world you would be able to actually lift that arm up to the point where you could lift and thrust.
Well, yeah, because my thought was, like, you know, like, knights must have one really buff arm. Like, they're like arm wrestlers, like, you know, they've got, they've got one really buff arm. And, like, the way that he's holding it up, I mean, he's holding it up in, like, a butterfly pose or whatever. Like, he's not tucking it under his arm. Like, it looks so awkward to hold it. And, like, a second ago, you couldn't lift your arm, huh?
Yeah.
Like, adrenaline is going through you now.
It was just the weight, the weight of your lightweight armor was too much to lift up. But yeah, regardless, I mean, it seems like an unfeasible moment, but it's a great moment nonetheless when he knocks Adhemar off. But then my, the one thing I laughed is, so he wins the match, and then all of a sudden his arm is miraculously healed because he's not holding it in any way. He jumps over the divider that divides the lanes and goes to Jocelyn and is like perfectly fine. It seems there was no injury at all.
Yeah.
Well,
I want to know, why does he scream his own name?
Yeah, I didn't understand that either.
William! Smash! Right? I don't know.
I completely forgot that he screams his own name. I thought, I mean, it's good enough to me when Chaucer announces him as William Thatcher to make the difference of like, oh, you finally get to be who you are. Yeah. I didn't understand, like, I almost feel like
it's a weird choice to have him.
I mean, I don't know what he should have yelled, but it definitely wasn't William.
Yeah. I will fong you. I did make a note when Chaucer does the, I missed my introduction. He says that William was born a stone's throw from this very stadium. And remember, back in Down to Earth, Mark Addy has the line of, I was born a stone's throw from the River Thames. So I was wrong at that time, though, that the line that it's not quite the same line, but it is a very similar line in two different Mark Addy movies. So,
Nice.
But yeah, we've got the moment at the end there where you've been weighed, measured, and found wanting. I don't quite understand the found wanting. Like, Count Adhemar says it a couple times, right? Like, this isn't the first time it's been said in the movie, but they throw back his own line. What does found wanting mean?
It essentially means like you fall short. It's just another way of saying you've fallen short. So it's like,
okay.
Yeah. Like you're not as good as you think you are, type thing.
Gotcha.
I don't understand that scene. Like, I don't understand what's going on with that scene when Adhemar gets knocked off his horse, and then
he looks like he's floating,
and then they come, because it seems to be a dream sequence, but it would have been more effective if that actually happened in real life, but it doesn't seem to, because when they cut away, you can see that everybody else is clearly on the opposite side of, from where he is, like, those two moments aren't happening in the same reality.
Yeah, like, at least when William got knocked off his horse in the beginning, he flashed back to another part of his life, not to this fantasy about these people throwing his own words in his face.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that you say that, it feels like I feel a little cheated.
Yeah.
Because they should have been the ones that did say that to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the floating, it reminds me of Gladiator.
Yeah,
because there's very, the whole bit where he floats around. But it's like, it doesn't make sense in this moment. Yeah, it should just be them standing over him being like, ah, fuck you, bitch.
Exactly. You got fonged.
You got fonged. So the kiss at the end with Jocelyn, it dissolves into stars, where with the stars, you can actually see Orion the Hunter prominently displayed, which is what Jocelyn has been referring to him as the whole movie, is a hunter.
So it's like, oh,
clever, clever. That was a fact that I had to read, because I wouldn't have come to that conclusion, because I've always thought the star thing was weird. And then when I read that, I go, oh, doesn't make any more sense. But like, I can see, you know, at least one of the subtle things they were trying to say with that, I guess, is the hunter finally got his girl. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
And then, did you stay around for the bonus scene? Did you wait until the end of the credits?
No.
Did you remember to?
I didn't remember to.
I mentioned it in Blazing Saddles. I was hoping you would remember to.
I'm going to YouTube it right now. I completely forgot.
Yeah, because it's similar to the campfire scene in Blazing Saddles. It's an homage.
Oh, here we go. I'll watch it quickly since it's only 27 seconds.
Yeah. You're round.
Oh,
he has to buy the next round. Yeah, he has to buy the next round because his fart was so pathetic.
Nice.
Yeah, that's one of the first post-credit scenes that I remember in a movie is this one. Yeah,
that's
so
funny. Yeah, I think I missed it because, like, I watched the movie on Netflix. And so, like, as soon as the credits hit, Netflix just, like, moves you on to the next thing, so I didn't even think to wait around.
Yeah, at least something like Disney Plus has the skip credits feature now.
Yeah.
If they know that there's something at the end of credits. And I like that because it's like, when you see that pop up, it's like, there's something else.
Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Netflix hasn't quite figured that one out yet. Well, there we go. That is A Knight's Tale. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 6.9 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 56. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 59% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 79%. Oh, man, those numbers all hurt.
Yeah, they do.
But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a lance to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, let me go back here and find said reviews. Alrighty then. Theodore M. gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, "It's stupid in so many ways, but all the characters are lovable, so it's worth a watch. I just can't call it good. The poem has its charms, though."
Are they talking about the communal love letter, I guess?
Yeah, I was wondering if they were talking about that or if they were talking about, like, the Chaucer poem or something. I don't know.
Oh.
Kristen M. says, 5 out of 5 stars, "Pretty much a perfect movie. For years, it was the movie that we would watch over and over again. It has knights, great clothes, music that I can reminisce over, funny actors, good writing, and a plot worth paying attention to. I ignore its flaws." It has flaws, she puts in parentheses. "Well, others in my family do not. But it's just such a pleasant, funny movie. We own it, but still, if it is on TV, I will stop everything for a moment and watch. Again, I don't rewatch many other movies. Introduced me to Alan Tudyk, who is pure comic genius in this film, and in most everything he does. Also introduced me to Rufus Sewell, who is an excellent evil character," and then puts in parentheses, "and hot!" exclamation mark.
Okay, she likes a bad boy.
Yeah. Lewis M. says, 5 out of 5, "In my top 5 movies of all time, feel good, great music, easy watch with an imaginative and gripping take on a classic story. A seamless blend of old and new. A classic example of this and one of my favorite scenes is the ballroom dance. It's iconic. And Heath Ledger is just the most incredible actor with a fantastic supporting cast."
See, I think one of mine favorite, well, no, I guess not necessarily. One moment that I really like is his when he's learning how to be a knight montage.
Yeah.
I like that bit where they have the funny lines like, I think he's getting worse.
Yeah.
But that whole bit, or when he hooks the ring and it's like, I got it. And then it pulls him off because he doesn't think to let go of the lance. Like, it's just, that's one of the moments that I really enjoyed in the movie.
I even like before that when he's like, when he's trying to convince Watt and Roland to join him and he takes their money and is like, if you guys can get this from me, then you can go. But if I keep it, then you have to help me. And he, like, as if these two grown men couldn't beat him and they just decide to just go for it. I like that scene a lot.
Yeah.
Jose A says, 5 out of 5 stars. While this film will never win an Oscar, I believe it to be the golden standard for educating young children in the history classes of tomorrow. It makes history down to earth and approachable, all the while highlighting how privileged we are in the modern world. We can all participate in sports like jousting, eat well, and change our stars with a little imagination, hard work, and dedication. Lastly, it subconsciously suggests to kids that interracial relationships are cool. Rest in power to one of the GOATs, Heath Ledger, a talented young man who died for his craft and had an astounding impact on my life.
Wow, that guy.
He brings up a lot of things that I never thought of, never considered.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. Like, Jocelyn is half something,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know what. But yeah, I mean, there was one comment you made in there that had me thinking of something. Shoot, I lost it.
history class.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I think the history class comment is probably as accurate as letting kids watch Hamilton. It's like, well, okay, it gives you a way to appreciate history.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can take it completely at face value.
Yeah. Ryan V says 5 out of 5 stars. At this point, a classic feel-good flick with a wonderful cast to boot. Honestly, if you don't like this movie, you have a cold heart. Highly quotable, and the cast has chemistry full of hilarity.
Okay, yeah.
And those are my reviews for this week. Well, I mean, there's one more here I have.
Okay.
Steve D says 1 star out of 5. Once you get beyond the Queen music, there isn't much here. Then he says, oh, and I hate, all caps, Queen music. So, I mean, I don't know how seriously you can take that guy's review if he hates Queen music. I mean, if you hate Queen music, do you really love anything?
You angry, bitter little man. Right on. So, yeah, we've got 6.9 and 79 from audiences and 56 and 59s from critics. Horrible numbers, I have to say.
Yeah, unfair.
I like this.
Unfair numbers, I would say.
I mean, I get it. I can look at it somewhat objectively and say, it's not a perfect movie. It's a sports movie.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at it, and I love sports movies. I love my Mighty Ducks and my Rockies and all the ones that we've mentioned already. Like, I like a good feel-good sports movie and an underdog story, and that's what this is. And it's, I mean, it's an 80% movie for me because it is so much fun, right? Even though I know, like, logically, you know, it's a formulaic underdog story, and those numbers are probably accurate, but you gotta put in the fun quantity and bump that up even more, because, like, yeah, objectively it might be a 65% movie, but for fun factor, it's an 80% movie for me. I mean, I love this movie.
Yeah, I would say, sure, like, if you want to judge a movie as, like, a piece of art and go through all its different aspects and rate it, then maybe it fall, like, sure, is the cinematography great? Is, like, what I mean, really, but even on, for me on that aspect, I don't even know. But I can see where some people are coming from with that. Like, it's a...
Well, I feel like cinematically, there's a lot of beautiful things to see in this movie. Like when they're walking through the church on the horse, I can't quite tell if that's green screen in the background or whether that's actually a church.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. I can't quite tell. But it's like it's a beautiful, like, set decoration or art direction that they've got going on. But also, like, in the jousting scenes, I mean, you're dealing with some very complex things. You're dealing with large crowds of people. You're dealing with animals. You're dealing with these two people driving big sticks into each other's chest. And they do it all with some, like, glorious shots, some great slow motion. I mean, it's...
Yeah,
I think cinematically it is nice to look at, you know?
Yeah, as I was saying it, I automatically just disagreed with my where I was going, so I'm glad that you brought that up.
Okay, sorry.
I was going to say, I think the only thing that people could fault this movie on is that it's a mix of two genre films.
Yeah.
And so if you don't like medieval genre and you don't like sports movies, which I think those are two types of movies that generally people may have problems with, then I could understand why you don't like it.
Yeah.
But to me, like, the ultimate metric of a movie is it entertaining? Mm-hmm. Is it gripping? Can it hold my attention? And this movie is like a resounding 10 out of 10 on those two fronts. Like, it's, and like I said at the top, I think that every actor's performance is like exactly what it needed to be to make this the greatest, the greatest movie that it could be. Like, I don't think that anybody falls short. I would say, like, the only thing that kind of falls short, again, is a love story, but it's, like, it's a sports movie. Like, it's like...
The love story is the B plot. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. The love story might even be the C plot, to be honest. Like,
yeah.
And so
yeah.
It's just, like, it's not the main... It's there, but it's not the main focus, and it's similar to, like, all, like... mid to late 90s, early 2000s, like, love stories, when, like, everything else is the bigger part of the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this movie is highly underrated by the general public, and I regret that I haven't watched it more in the last 20 years that it's been around.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, for me, it can't be below an 80%. It's definitely an 8 out of 10 movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the bottom line, because Colin Stewart said so.
There we go. Yeah. No, I like the sound of that. And, I mean, no matter what, if you haven't seen A Knight's Tale and you've made it to the end of this episode, it's going to be the greatest movie about jousting with a 70s soundtrack that you've ever seen.
Yeah, for sure.
I can almost guarantee that, because I added in that little extra bit at the end about the soundtrack just in case the Matt Damon Ben Affleck one is better.
I mean, judging by the preview, it already looks pretty boring, so I don't think it's going to take A Knight's Tale.
No, this is too much fun. Well, there we go. That is A Knight's Tale, and that is our show for this week. Oh boy, if you like that show, one thing you can really do to help us out is, well, you know what? Don't do anything. Don't tell your friends about our show. Don't share our posts. You know, don't give us any reviews. Don't go give us 5 stars. I'm seeing if reverse psychology is going to work here. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, tell your friends or share our posts. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast. We want to get noticed, and we want to build a bigger base. And if you tell people, that'll help us out. Or go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars. In the reviews, it doesn't matter what you say. It's just those 5 stars, they mess with the algorithms, and science just drives us up the charts and helps us get noticed. Or if you want to be a financial supporter, become a producer of I Used to Like This One, you can go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon family and get a shout out on the show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go on there, give us some likes, give us some shares, give us some comments. Is there a movie that you used to like? I bet there is. If so, you should drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.